Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston and we're recording on a sunny Friday afternoon, should I say, ahead of a historic FA Cup final, the first Manchester derby ever in the FA Cup final. And I'm joined by Samuel Luckhurst, who's going to look ahead to the game and dissect the week's news. There's a bit of transfer news going on across the next 45 minutes or so. But before we get stuck into that, I've got to ask Samuel, how was the press game? On Tuesday morning.
It was. We scored four times as many goals as last season, but unfortunately, we also conceded more goals than last season. We came off not quite knowing what the final score was, and then it was confirmed later on that it ended up 9-4. And in fairness, we should have scored more goals. We had some good opportunities. There was a we did use a couple of cheat codes. Danny Webber scored both our goals in the first half, but then he had to go off, so he could only play a half for us. But in the second half, coincidentally, we actually without our goal scorer, we actually drew the second half. That was 2-2. So that's the pride we can take away from it. But it's always
well. You would have won if I was playing, of course. I'll be there next year. If Bruce Springsteen's, I doubt he's going to be playing again so soon anyways, and the date's going to fall on that game. I was obviously very disappointed to miss out.
Yeah, but, understandably so. It is, it's a great day out. Whatever your age, whether you're a United fan or a football follower, it's just a brilliant stadium to play at. It's something to cherish for a very, very long time. So, and I've had the very good fortune of being able to have done it three times. So hopefully there are many more to come.
The only problem with those games is that the pitch is absolutely immaculate. So when you take a heavy touch, there's no excuse really, is there? You can't look down and say there's a divot there or there's a dodgy bit of astroturf, because it looked fantastic, the photos that you guys sent of you were playing, and a few souvenirs as well, a few shirts, of course, from the game itself. Anyways, we'll go in straight into the FA Cup final, Samuel. As I've said, the first Manchester derby in the FA Cup final tomorrow afternoon. A fantastic occasion. It's going to be some game. Third trip to Wembley this season for United fans, which if you told them that at the start of the season, I'm sure they would have slapped your hands off. And I did note today, if you cast your mind back to the semi-finals when United played Brighton and City played Sheffield United, I think there was a lot of empty seats for the City game, but there wasn't for the United game, so that's something to keep an eye on. I'm sure it'll be a sellout tomorrow afternoon. What are your expectations for the game, Samuel? We talked earlier in the week about the match and how this City team have peaked in the spring. They've really progressed, and Guardiola's settled on this team now, where he's brought Ruben Diaz back into the side, and they look phenomenal. They've obviously reached the Champions League. They're in hunt for a treble. So can United lift the FA Cup? And if so, how are they going to do it?
Well, they can. They've already beaten City this season. Those two derbies, I think they were 104 days apart, and they were extremely different for a number of reasons. I mean, the 6-3 game, it was a very naive approach from United, and Ten Hag did touch upon that in the embargoed section of the press conference. He did his press conference on Thursday. United have obviously, unless people haven't seen it, they've already travelled down to London. And he did touch upon what was different about United. And the obvious thing to say is that, well, Casemiro started. That was a big, that was a pretty significant difference in winning that game. looking ahead to this game on Saturday, where the stakes are so high, and where United really do need to make a tactical tweak because they're coming up against the best club side in world football. I don't think anybody would dispute that. But we touched upon this already. There is a danger that they've already shown their hand in terms of how they prepare for it, but they are limited as to what they can do. We were discussing before we came on to do this and the possible bench that United could have tomorrow. And unfortunately for United, it's pretty desperate, and it's so desperate to the point that I think if they are to win the cup final, I think it's got to come within 90 minutes.
Samuel, have you got that bench? Recently. Sorry, have you got that bench handy? Because it's probably worth reading out the message that you sent.
I'll read. This is going off the top of my head now. I think it was Butland, Malacia, Maguire, Dallow, McTominay, Garnacho, Weghorst, Pelestri, Elanga. Now that's a bench where, possibly the majority of those players might not be at United next season, or there's certainly a question mark against the majority of them. Dallow and Garnacho have signed new contracts. Malacia's not going to go anywhere. Butland will probably be let go because he's only on loan. Same with Weghorst. Langer, United happy to sell him. Pelestri, likely to be loaned. McTominay, you're not quite sure there. Probably stay, given the interest in Fred early on. And Maguire, that could go one of two ways. So that is not a great position to be in when, had everyone been fit, they could have had, certainly as far as the attack is concerned, they might have struggled to get all of the game changers on the bench. They might have been in a situation where Jadon Sancho might have had to have been left out. But Sancho's going to be starting now. So they're without Sabitzer, they're without Martial, they're without Antony. And United would have a better squad with those three available. Nobody can argue with that, whatever their status, whatever people may think of Martial as a starter. I never thought he should have been starting the cup final, but the way Ten Hag was talking about him and the way he was using him, it seemed to indicate that he was going to start him. I don't necessarily think that's a blow. The blow is that United have not got a lot to turn to on the bench. The game changer is only Garnacho. Pelestri has got the capabilities, and he was pretty bright when he came on. I think was it against Fulham last week? He had a little cameo, and he does seem to do things when he comes on. But Ten Hag just doesn't really fancy him. If he did, he'd have played him a hell of a lot more this season. And then you look at City's quality and depth, and it's probably the best on the planet. And with extra times, we saw again in the Europa League in midweek, a lot of extra times now, people are just waiting for penalties to come along. And that was almost the case with Sheffield Wednesday against Barnsley on Monday. It was a goal in the, what was it, the 123rd minute? I think that avoided penalties. It was extremely cruel on Barnsley as well, who did brilliantly with 10 men. But extra times, the World Cup final seems to be the exception to the norm. Extra time at the moment, it's getting to the point where the conversation has to be had, do we just get rid of it and get on with penalties, and especially with the schedule with players. And City are probably one of the few teams that come extra time, they can move through the gears, because the quality they've got is extraordinary. They are going to have a hell of a bench against United tomorrow, unless they've got really significant injuries to contend with. And even if there are two or three who can't make it, their quality and depth is still going to easily trump United's. And you look at the team that United ended the semi-final with and the penalty takers, and there's always a risk with that, because you're taking good players off who you would otherwise entrust with taking a penalty, and you look at the scorers of those penalties as well, and they converted all of them. But you would not be as certain of United getting that far against City with the bench they have in these circumstances. So I think if they're to win it, it's got to be within 90 minutes. They're going to need to be some Herculean efforts. They've got to be quite varied with their tactics. Everyone expects Fernandes to start on the wing. If he doesn't, what's the alternative? They've got to have something up their sleeve that is going to throw City. Now, Fernandes has started on the wing, when I think it's seven or eight times this season. It's always been on the right. If he pops up there on the left, and you've got Kyle Walker starting with the intention of pitting him against Jadon Sancho, that might throw City, because all of a sudden Walker is unoccupied and City might have to have a conference as to what he's going to do and how does that affect the rest of the back four. You've got to try and keep City guessing, which is why, although I think everyone, I mean, we've done our teams for the panel and it's our personal 11, it's also probably the predicted 11 as well. Although that team is what United should go with on paper, you would encourage them to be moving the shapes around. You'd be telling Sancho, go over to the right every now and then, because City don't have a left back, not an out and out left back. Try and make the most of that. You've been playing well on the right side in recent games. Get out there, show everyone what you can do against your former club as well. I mean, that's something that's not been talked about whatsoever, because it's a pretty small subplot, but it could be the big talking point of the final. You never know. And Rashford as well, we all know that he's at his optimum off the left. So although he's probably going to start up front, pull on to the left, have a go at Walker every now and then, see who else can go through the middle. Just try and change it up, try and be as varied as possible. Because as phenomenal as a team City are, United have got a decent defensive record, and they have got to also show the faith and the trust in their defenders that they can do the job when need be. And if you're to win an FA Cup final, unless it goes to penalties, you need to score. So the forwards have got to be arguably more on it than the defenders, even though they're coming up against Haaland and De Bruyne, etc.
Feels like every player in that red shirt tomorrow is going to have to be at 100% and giving their best performance, and hope that City do underperform or make little mistakes across the pitch, and then maybe a result can be found from there. I guess if you're a glass half full kind of guy, which I certainly am, Samuel, you'd say over the years United have had a tendency to shock City in the games. I mean, look at the Solskjaer era. He had one of the best win percentages against Guardiola, didn't he? And then you look at that game in January, and that was the same kind of absorbing pressure, but City didn't really do much with it, and it was great football for United on the counter-attack and really deadly and ruthless. But as you've just said, Fernandes was on the right wing in that game, and I think a lot of that is being talked about in the build-up from us guys, and I think from supporters as well, because it's going to be a key point, I feel. Do you think it's going to be inevitable then that he will start on the right? I was just looking back at the quote from Ten Hag after that game in January, and he said he created hesitation and confusion for the opponent.
Which is what they need to do again.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and he liked how he's creating a numerical advantage, obviously, coming into midfield when they're not in possession. Yeah. So it really feels like that's going to be the key change, doesn't it, or the key tweak tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, and you have to play the percentages in games like this. You look at Eriksen as an example. In a game that's going to be this intense, it would be a surprise if he lasted beyond the 70-minute mark. So when does he come off? Who is going to go on for him? Depending on the scoreline, I'm sure Ten Hag will have a decision planned out, made there, that if United are in need of a goal, Eriksen comes off, Garnacho goes on, Fernandes goes back as the 10, and then maybe Sancho's on the right. If United happen to be leading at that point, then logically McTominay goes on to offer an extra shield for the defence as United try and hang on. You've got to prepare for all possibilities. I remember Mourinho saying years ago when Chelsea were, I think after they'd beaten PSG 2-0 in the second leg of Champions League tie, and they trailed 3-1 going into it, they prepared for a scenario where it was the last 10 or 15 minutes of a game and they needed a goal to be ahead on the away goals rule, and they did get that goal as well. They won the game 2-0 with quite a late goal. So the preparation for such huge games, you've got to try and cover all bases. And it's fascinating being reminded of that quote from Ten Hag about Fernandes, because Fernandes has when he's played there, it's not always been for rotational purposes. He played there twice against Aston Villa, both games when Unai Emery was in charge. So it wasn't like it was just because it was Aston Villa. It was clearly because of something that Emery had brought to the table, and you wouldn't have really envisaged Ten Hag doing that if Steven Gerrard was the manager of Villa. Villa are a completely different entity under Emery to when Gerrard was in charge. So that's clearly a strategy that I think is going to happen. And as I said earlier, there is a danger that United have shown their hand, and that's why they've got to vary it. If Fernandes drifts out to the left, no, you know, I don't think anybody should grumble about that if you're a United supporter, because, as I said, Sancho has been playing quite well on the right recently, so you want him to have stints out on the right. You don't want him just fixed to his position the whole time. That's why, one of the reasons why City are a great side. They're so fluid and they can interchange, and they've got such intelligent players. They pop up in different areas, and it's getting to the point now where, although we have team sheets and we put players in positions, once the paper's been submitted, you might as well put it through the shredder, because it doesn't really matter a great deal. And especially the way City play, where they play with four defenders, but they play with a back three, and John Stones is a midfielder.
Almost one at the back.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty fascinating just even talking about it. And we're talking the day before the game. So, it's difficult to see it playing out and being extremely dull. I think there's going to be a hell of a lot of it that's going to be interesting and talked about for a good while to come.
I love seeing the graphics after games when it shows you the average positions, because it just really shows you and emphasises that point you were just making about how formations these days, you obviously have to have them at the start of the game. But it's crazy some of the positions these players take up. And as Stones, we've not even mentioned him at the start there, and we're kind of given the players a mention. What a season he's had, and he's moved into midfield, and the coaching from Guardiola has been incredible. If we stick with that midfield battle though, Samuel, I've not checked the panels actually. I know you've put yours in, and our colleague Liam has as well. I had Fred in the midfield, and I kind of feel that he's going to start, like, it's a certainty. But would it be a shock to see McTominay coming in that midfield with McTominay, Casemiro and Eriksen? Would that generally surprise you? Because I could kind of see it, you know, I could actually see it happening. Obviously, McTominay kept Casemiro out of the team at the start of the campaign. He played the Etihad, didn't he? And he was eventually
until they came up against City.
Well, exactly. That's my point. But I don't think it would be completely shockers if he was to start tomorrow.
I think if he starts tomorrow, it'll be his first start in 46 days. And it's 46 or 56, something like that. And immediately, for United fans, they'll be thinking of Ji-Sung Park being brought back in from the cold to line up against City in the April 2012 derby. And what an infamous tactical choice that was by Ferguson. It was Park's last game. It didn't work. United played for a draw, they lost, and that was as decisive for the title that season as Sergio Aguero's winning goal against QPR, I'd argue. And as I just touched upon, McTominay started at the Etihad, and United were quite naive there. Everybody knew that was going to be the United team going into that game, which sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's a bad thing. And when you're coming up against City, if your lineup is that obvious, I think you've got a problem. And McTominay and Eriksen was too pedestrian in midfield to cope with City that day. Fred, look, he may be brilliant, he may be abysmal. That is, sometimes there's very little in between. Last week he was dreadful, but he somehow contributed to both goals, and the assist for Fernandes' goal was a terrific pass. I just feel as though Fred's energy and his pressing as well, that gives him a clear advantage ahead of McTominay. If McTominay was starting this final, and look, he may start it, but I don't think he will, I'd have thought he'd have got a start against Fulham last week. That'd have been the time to put him in. There were a couple of hints, I thought, with the team against Fulham last week regarding what the cup final 11 would be. And everybody expected Fred to come in. And logically, a lot of United fans would have said, look, Champions League qualification is sorted, take Casemiro out of the team. But I always thought that Ten Hag wouldn't do that, because he has not played Fred and McTominay together since the Brighton game in the opening weekend of the season. It is always one or the other. Yeah, exactly. It's been very sensible strategy. And Fred also he's started more games than McTominay this season. And he started both games against Barcelona. He started against City in January, which you can't underestimate, even though City have evolved as a team since then, tactically. and he starts in the League Cup final next to Casemiro. So it wouldn't quite be a shock of Jim Leighton being dropped for Les Seeley proportions for the 1990 final replay, but McTominay coming into the team, I would strongly advise against that. I think he could have a good impact coming on in the game as he did in the League Cup final, but this is not a game to be starting him. And it's also not a game to be starting Eriksen that deep either, I'd argue. I think United do need him because he's creative and he's tidy with the ball. He's very careful. He's got good versatility as well. He's another one who could move to the right if need be in game. But he could also easily be overwhelmed given the obvious physical weaknesses is possibly a bit too harsh, but this is a man who, you know, who effectively died on the pitch 2 years ago. It's remarkable he's still operating at this high level, and that's why I think everybody knows that if or when Eriksen starts, that he'll do well to last 70 minutes, especially against this City.
So. Yeah, he faded. He definitely faded in the semi-final against Brighton, did he? In April. Mm. He definitely faded throughout that game, and it was inevitable he was going to get brought off, I thought. We'll leave it there for part one anyways. We'll be back in a moment for part two.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So obviously we're just talking about Fred there, Samuel, and that we both picked them for our teams, obviously, at the start. And I kind of looked at it today, my five things for the morning, five things to look out. And one of the sections on that, one of the headings, was some potential farewells tomorrow at Wembley. And we discussed that early in the week, actually, because there was obviously some nice, lovely scenes at the end of the game at Old Trafford when the players had the families on the pitch, etc. But that could be the final appearance at Old Trafford for some, and tomorrow could be the final appearance for the club for some. If you look at those players, who do you think has potential then to maybe make the last game for the club? I mean, Fred, for me, off the top of my head, obviously, Fulham are interested. Harry Maguire, where Coast is leaving, isn't he? Jack Butland, his loan's expiring. So Marcel Sabitzer, he's going to be in the stands as well watching. What does your kind of instinct tell you with that? Do you think United are going to maybe make a permanent offer? How do you think that is going to develop?
There was a Dutch journalist at Carrington on Thursday from NOS, and his last question was, will this be Wout Weghorst's last game? And Ten Hag didn't really want to get into it, but he could have just asked either of us, any of us there, and we'd have told him yes.
I mean, yeah, waste of a question.
It was a waste of a question. He scored two goals in 30 games. I don't think even Burnley will want to keep him for next season. He doesn't even fit into Burnley's plans. So how the hell he's meant to fit into United's plans is beyond me. There's no guarantee necessarily that he'll even come on. I wouldn't necessarily advise on throwing Weghorst on unless United were absolutely desperate. And even still, you'd think, well, there's possibly a more strategic route to possibly getting a goal. Okay, Weghorst did tremendously in the quarterfinal of the World Cup against Argentina, but that was a one-off. And unfortunately for United, it feels like they pretty much signed him on loan on the back of that. And Simon Peach said to me yesterday, he said he saw Weghorst score as many goals in 10 minutes in that game in Qatar as he's seen him score in 4 or 5 months at United. And as you said, with Fred, sometimes that happens. You maximise a player and until the very last game, and then you know they come to a natural end at the club, and that could well be the case with Fred. And I think it's, you know, it speaks volumes of his character and how important he can be for United that he should be starting the FA Cup final, and that he should also be sold in the summer if there's a taker like Fulham lined up for him. And that's something that has been mooted. Maguire, again, does he, with some of these players, do they get on the pitch? I mean, some of the club media this week, they've had Maguire quite, you know, he's been front and centre, he's been quite prominent. And last week there was one that said, you know, Harry Maguire reviews the season. And sometimes you think, crikey, you know, you're setting the player up for a fall there. Just don't tweet that out, whatever you do. And nobody is wondering, nobody's even talking about Harry Maguire not starting the FA Cup final, even though he's the United captain and the most expensive defender in the world still, 4 years on, because this season has been his worst at the club. And he also has naturally come to the end. He's just got to accept that. You know, he's given it a good go. He's been professional, but he's not good enough. He's not good enough to be a starter in a Manchester United team that is more successful now and is playing under this manager. I mean, even Wan-Bissaka, who, again, I think logically he should start. Dalot signed a new contract. United, or Ten Hag, is interested in Jeremy Frimpong. If he's absolutely adamant on getting a right back in the summer, there's only one player who has to be sold now, because you're not going to have three right backs in that squad next season. And one of them is Wan-Bissaka and Dalot and Frimpong. That's just not going to happen. You can't get away with just saying, well, we got rid of Brandon Williams. And again, if United get a £30 million offer for Wan-Bissaka, they have to take that. If that's coming their way, and I think there might be reasonable interest in him as well, because his form and his reputation, it has recovered in the last 4 or 5 months. But as Ten Hag says, you know, he says good is never good enough. You look at Wan-Bissaka and Dalot as right backs. Okay, they're good, but are they both good enough? A lot of United supporters would say no. And Wan-Bissaka has a ceiling. He is not going to ever reach the level of Reece James, never mind Trent Alexander-Arnold, as a right back. That is beyond him. So it's feasible that could be the case, but it's also feasible that United, regarding a right back, they just kick that can down the road and maybe look at it next year and keep, you know, stick with Wan-Bissaka and Dalot. And as we touched upon earlier, with the bench, I think the majority of them probably won't be at United next season, and that's the way it should be as well. It's that's possibly the biggest problem for them going into this FA Cup final, the state of the bench. I think unfortunately for United, it might look desperate. The only thing I would say is that when the United players were ferried to the airport on Thursday, they were transported there in blacked out vans, and they've only shown what, 6 images, I think, of players boarding the plane. It really wouldn't surprise me, given that they've gone to those lengths, if Ten Hag is being deliberately pessimistic about Anthony, or deliberately pessimistic about, you know, someone else, so that he can spring a bit of a surprise come cup final day. So, you know, it's such an important game and such a huge occasion that sometimes that element of kidology is advisable, because United, they need to
do it. He's been taking tips off Sir Alex Ferguson. I've said this on the podcast a few times. When they went for a meal, they weren't just talking about what food they were eating. He was going, Ferguson, give us some tips, because he's done that. Was it recently when I can't remember who it was. You might be.
There was one occasion earlier in the season.
It was a recent example.
Yeah, it was shortly after they'd dined in Wilmslow as well, I think.
Yeah, because I mentioned that in an article. I can't
quite remember what it was about.
Yeah, Just sticking with the right backs anyways before we get into that team use quickly.
Was it the Newcastle? It might have been saying that Newcastle were annoying. It might have been that ahead of the League Cup final.
Not a bad shout, yeah. And obviously Wan-Bissaka, I'm getting on to Wan-Bissaka, but he missed that game, wasn't he? He was ill and Dallo started. But my piece today was on, I was quite bullish about the Wan-Bissaka starting when we did the podcast earlier in the week, and obviously that's not changed now. I expect them to start, but I mean, fair play to him. I've said a few times, to come out from the complete cold in August and to be told he was going to leave the club, or he was free to leave the club, to then come back 9 months later and to force himself back into the team. I've been very impressed with his character to do that, because to be at such a low and then to fight back and kind of replace Dallo, I've been impressed by that. But as we said after, I think it was the Sevilla podcast, long term, for all Wan-Bissaka has improved, he's probably not going to be that right back to take you to a Premier League title, for example, if that's what Ten Hag wants to do, and he has serious ambitions for that anyways. But yes, team news, Samuel, obviously you touched on Anthony there. He sustained an injury against Chelsea, quite a nasty looking injury, unfortunately, and then Ten Hag came out before Fulham and give a surprise and positive update, didn't he? But the day at his press conference, he was a bit more downbeat, and he said, look, it's a slim chance of him playing that game, slim chance of him being available. And Martial as well, he's also been ruled out. He was ruled out before today's press conference. But I wanted to ask you about Martial specifically, Samuel. 27 years old, 9 goals this season. Do you know how many starts he's made this season?
16.
Oh, do you know what? That's quite impressive as well, 17. But, 17. I mean, if you actually look at the minutes, though, I mean, he's made 17 starts, but that's even worse by the minutes he's played, because he can never play 90 minutes, can he? He can never play a complete game. No. Is it a blow that he's out tomorrow? That's the question I want to ask, because I'm not sure it is.
Not as far as the starting level is concerned. I really wouldn't have been starting Martial. It would have been better to have had him available, but I don't think Ten Hag was ever going to have him as a substitute. I think if he was fit, he'd have started him.
Yeah, I think so.
And I'd have always argued that it would have been better to keep him in reserve, because he has come off the bench and had good contributions this season, and certainly at the start of the season when he was having those sporadic runouts, he almost seems to do something in every appearance. But in the grand scheme of things, he's not a great loss. You can't hang your hat on him at all. His recent goals, they've been tap-ins. He's one of those classic strikers that he seems to have this tendency that when he scores in games, you're still, when it comes down to marking him, you're still giving him 6 out of 10, because the goal has been, you know, pretty routine, or it's been a deflection, and beyond that, he's not contributed a great deal. And United he's long outstayed his welcome at United, but the trouble they have got now, going off the club statement on Monday, is that they refer to it as a muscular tear, which would suggest that is going to be a long period of recovery for a footballer. In the case of Martial, the period of recovery could be about a year. You never know with him, given how long his layoffs are. I mean, earlier in the season, he was fit for 4 weeks, wasn't he? And he wasn't being played because it was, you know, I mean, reassembling him, it's almost as delicate as assembling a nuclear weapon. If someone touches something, it'll all go off, it'll all crumble.
He's made of papier-mâché, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's made of papier-mâché. And the trouble they have got now is that he is possibly unsellable in the summer. And I really wouldn't be surprised if this time next year he's still a United player. He certainly won't be a United starter next season, because they're going to be signing a striker, and that striker is going to be taking his place, really. But really, it's not his place, because he's been too unavailable this season. And even yesterday, when I think it was the second port of call after Anthony, it was asked about. Ten Hag was asked about Martial, and I think he said, I'll just get the quote up now. He said, "These questions so many times from the media about absence of players in the last couple of months, and every time I say the same answer, it is about the players who are available, and many times we were successful." that was just someone who had absolutely no interest in speaking about Marshall. About some, that was from someone who is pretty much at the end of their tether with the
player. Do you not find that interesting though, Samuel? Because when he's spoken this season, I've generally believed that he's being sincere when he says that the team are better when Martial plays. I guess his point is when Martial is fit and available. But the problem is he's never fit and available. Really, is he's never fit fully, anyways.
No. And Ten Hag does genuinely believe that Martial has literally all of the attributes to be a world-class striker in terms of the talent, the physicality, the experience, the flexibility as well as a modern centre-forward. He thinks he's got the lot. And yet he hasn't. He's got 17 United goals in the last three seasons, which is... It's a meagre amount, and you cannot carry passengers if you're going to be successful. You look at City's squad, and that's what United have to aim for. It's a pretty lean squad, and everybody contributes. Nobody, when someone comes out of the team, someone comes in the team, the way the team plays doesn't change. And I think the biggest difference, if you want to look for a big difference between United and City that isn't, you know, the trophies or the difference in points at the end of the season, is look at the number nines. City have Haaland and Julian Alvarez. United have Martial and Weghorst. That is how big the gap is between those teams. And that's reflected in the goals for column in the Premier League table.
Alvarez was an absolute snip as well, wasn't he, when they signed the...
Yeah.
Can't remember stuff from South America.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah, well, Martial, I mean, when
Plate
you go...
he came from?
There you go. Good shout as well. With Martial, I mean, if you leave a club on loan at his age, your time's over. If you're leaving a club and you're late 20s...
He's out of contract next year as well.
Well, that's the thing. He's out of contract this year. But, I mean, I've said time on time on this podcast, I just can't see him being sold to anyone permanently. I can't see a football club, a serious football club, making a permanent bid to take him when he can't play in 90 minutes. Yeah, and then it's a good point when you made. I mean, was it a few weeks ago? I think it was in January when we brought up the point where we said, "Look, he's been training for 4 weeks and he's still not available." But he was in full training for 4 weeks. So how can a professional footballer be in full training for 4 weeks and still not be match fit? I mean, that just raises
and when he did come back, flags. When he did come back into the team, it was as a substitute.
Yeah.
Weghorst was still starting ahead of him, so the easing in process. I've never known an easing in process of a footballer. I think Darren Anderson, who some will remember, he was infamously known as a sick note in the 90s at Tottenham. He probably hit the ground running coming back from injury more than Martial did. It's at the point now where the best case scenario in the summer is that there might be a club desperate in the window late on, who would take Martial for a loan fee and cover his wages for the season. Because as I said, where they've said it's a muscular tear, that would indicate it's quite a long recovery time. And look,
did you see the footage circulating or the screenshot? I mean, supporters were suggesting that he sustained the injury jokingly in Ten Hag's speech because he was holding his hamstring while Ten Hag was speaking on the pitch after the Fulham victory. But you know what? It probably wouldn't surprise us considering his injury record. No. Do you know what, Samuel?
Bending down to pick up his son or something like that. Yeah, you wouldn't. He's just so brittle, unfortunately. And yeah.
Bruce Springsteen is 73 years old, right? He did a three-hour set on Tuesday night. A three-hour set, and he was jumping around. He was buoyant. It was excellent. Could you imagine what Martial's going to be like at 73?
He needs to call the boss and ask who his nutritionist is or his.
He certainly does.
His
I think we all do.
Trainer.
To be fair, if I'm moving like that at 73, I'll be delighted. It's amazing. Well, that'll do for part two. We'll be back in a moment for part three.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So, Samuel, a bit of transfer chat then to end the podcast. We've had plenty FA Cup final chat ahead of that game tomorrow. And we'll start with the line on Mason Mount, really, coming out this week. Obviously, United are interested in taking him from Chelsea. They've got an absolute ton of players, too many players, for their dressing room. That was an overspill, famously, under Graham Potter. So they do need to offload some players. United have agreed personal terms with Mason Mount, but obviously, I guess the sticking point is agreeing that transfer fee with Chelsea, isn't it? Because there is a difference in opinion at the moment on that fee.
I remember 6 years ago, I think it wasn't even June yet, and I mean, we're already in June and next month pre-season starts. That's how quickly time goes by. But we were still in May, and I did the story that United agreed personal terms with Nemanja Matic. I might not have written it as agreed personal terms. I think I might have kind of like deliberately softened it a little bit because I didn't want to get too far ahead of myself. But that's what I was told. That was in late May. That transfer was not completed until August the 1st, I think. So that's why, you know, the word close, you say a player's close to joining a club. I'm always extremely I'd always be reluctant to use that phrase, because what's close with transfers these days? It wouldn't surprise me if this time next month Mount is still a Chelsea player. But then again, Chelsea are under pressure to sell players by late June to get, because of the financial quarter. They need to get funds in this month rather than wait a little bit into July and see what happens. With Mount, he's kind of like not torched his relationship with Chelsea as such, but he wants out. And if a player wants out and they've got 1 year left on their contract and there's no chance of you know, changing his mind, you have to sell that player. And if you're Chelsea, no Champions League revenue next season, you're under pressure to balance the books after spending a stupid amount across two transfer windows and not selling enough players, then although he might be the homegrown hero, he's a homegrown hero who wants to leave home. So It's probably in Chelsea's best interest that they do get Mount out of the club before the end of the month, and that's why it could be a quick deal. But we've seen before, as I said, that sometimes when clubs are haggling, that's always a sticking point. That's what delays it. But the way it's going at the moment, it would probably be a surprise if Mason Mount isn't a United player next season. I mean, I was told on Wednesday evening before 8 p.m. that personal terms had been agreed, and you know, at the time, that's journalistically, it's never an ideal time to put a story out, but in the transfer season, you know, the time is immaterial if you're given that information and it's credible and it's well sourced, which it was, then you might as well put it out as soon as possible.
I always feel like with a club the size of Manchester United, with the spending power, personal terms isn't usually the hard part, is it? That's the thing. It's usually agreeing an actual fee with the club and coming to some kind of middle ground. Are you personally surprised, Samuel, at their interest in Mount anyways? Because they had this policy a couple of summers ago, with Solskjaer, and they were splashing the cash on these kind of British players, this kind of the English policy. Obviously, Dan James was Welsh, wasn't he? But they had Wan-Bissaka coming through the door and Harry Maguire, and let's just say that didn't really work out, did it, for the money they spent? I mean, it's going to take a hefty fee to prize Mount away, isn't it? We're probably talking north of 50 million. Is he worth that money? Because at his best, I probably would lean and say he would be. I thought he's fantastic for Chelsea and for England as well. Gareth Southgate relied on him so much in the Euros in the summer of 2021. But he has had a difficult season this year, but he's certainly not the only one, is he, at Stamford Bridge that applies to.
He's not necessarily someone that I'd have identified as a prime pick. And also, United need, and Ten Hag will have a plan for him, but they do need a midfielder, central midfielder. Mount can play there, but when you you talk about his position, you think of someone who plays higher up the pitch, which is where Fernandez plays. And I take Fernandez over Mount every day, but you look at Mount's career, every manager that he's played under has loved working with him, and you'd have imagined Pochettino would love working with him at Chelsea as well. He's a player who is extremely aligned with, you know, Pochettino's type of player. You saw the job that he did with young English players at Tottenham, Eric Dier, Dele Alli, Harry Kane. They all improved, or they played their best football under Pochettino. And I suspect Chelsea would have hoped that that would have been enough to convince Mount, or one of the reasons to convince Mount to commit. But the problem that they've encountered is that they've given Reece James I think Reece James might even be one of the highest paid players at the club, or one of the best paid players at the club, and Mount wasn't offered parity with him. And Reece James is a right back, Mason Mount is an attacking midfielder. He's well within his rights to wonder why he's not being offered a similar wedge there. But you'd imagine with United, and you see it with Fred as well, where he'll play with Casemiro will hold the fort, and Fred is able to wander upfield, supplement the attack, get higher up, and get into goal scoring positions. And he's got a few goals as well this season. You'd imagine that would be what they want, that Ten Hag wants to do with Mount. If he's coming into that team, it's taking Eriksen out of it, using Eriksen as more of a rotational player next season, which would be sensible given his age, given how often he's substituting games. I think he's been substituting some like 22 or 23 second halves this season. But United have still maximised his talent. He's had a really good season, Eriksen. But it would be a risk to go into next season with Casemiro and Eriksen, two 31-year-olds who turn 32 in February next year, as your prime midfielders. They do need someone more energetic there. And Mount is, tactically, he's a very intelligent operator. And as I said, he's worked under a diverse collection of coaches. And whether it's Englishman Frank Lampard, German Thomas Tuchel, Englishman Frank Lampard again, his second spell at Chelsea, Gareth Southgate with England national team, they all really rate him. I didn't think he was particularly impressive during the Euros, but Southgate kept on playing.
I think
him,
he does
and
the
he
stuff.
Him back into the team.
Yeah, he does the stuff
as
off
well,
the ball
because he missed a couple of games, didn't he?
Yeah, he does a lot of stuff that goes with unnoticed, doesn't he? I think. Mount.
Yeah, his defensive and I think work. That would be the. It's he clearly has assets that qualified football managers, coaches see that fans don't see, and he's done pretty well out of it. So I think Ten Hag's hit rate, that give it from United, if you're a United fan, you've got to have faith in that, because by and large the signings have been, you know, pretty good, very successful, the permanent signings anyway, you know, take the loans out of the equation there. And also, going back to when we spoke to Ten Hag in Melbourne at Amy Park in July, I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask him and managed to was, you know, is there a why are you focused on signing players developed in the Eredivisie? At the time, it was Malacia, Eriksen, and Martinez. They were the three that were pretty much through the door at that point. And his first words to me were, "No, I'd like to sign English players," and here we are with United having agreed personal terms with Mount, and been, you know, they've done a hell of a lot of due diligence into trying to sign Harry Kane, but that is more complicated because at the moment they're operating under the assumption that Tottenham just will not sell him this summer, hence why they're having to look at other options.
Who's the Dan James equivalent in this market, Samuel? Can we see another Dan James coming in? A British player, Dan James. I'm trying to think.
He's gradually getting back to his level, isn't he? He's now a Championship player again with Leeds, which was probably what he was all along at United.
Definitely. But to be fair to Dan James, he did lack quality, a bit like Weghorst actually, but he always tried hard. So we'll give him
He did very well in his first 4 to 6 months at United, he was he was very good. He certainly surprised everyone, I think. He did have a pretty good start at United.
With Mo as well, just the last word on that, it's no surprise that obviously United are interested. I think it speaks volumes that United are interested, and Liverpool as well. You've got these top teams around the Premier League who are trying to close the gap, and if your rivals are looking to buy your top players off you, I think that tells Chelsea something. We'll end then, Samuel, with a bit of chat on Rasmus Højlund, the striker from Atalanta. 20 years old, Danish centre forward. He's been scoring for fun for the national team the last few international breaks. He's got 15 goals in 41 games over in Italy. And Ten Hag's had a few video calls with him, hasn't he? Is that correct?
Yes, I did write that. It would be quite the shock if I said now that I made it up. But Ten Hag has spoken to him, and I don't think it's been confirmed yet. But it should happen. It looks like Højlund is going to be signed up by the SEG agency that also represent Ten Hag, which some people might say that's convenient, but also Højlund is pretty hot on the market, it seems. He's had quite the rise. He was still playing for Sturm Graz this time last year, and there's an interesting correlation there going off what United were trying to do last summer, where they were looking, John Mertor met with the agent of Benjamin Sesko, who is another young striker. I think he's the same age as Højlund, who was developed in Austria. I don't think that's entirely a coincidence. It seems like there are certain territories where there are certain strikers, even though they're very different nationalities and they're not necessarily Austrian, that they're catching the eye playing there. And certainly in the case of Højlund, going to Atalanta is quite the ringing endorsement, in that Atalanta have got a very good reputation of developing very good young players. For a long time now, their academy in Italy has been considered the best. United signed Ahmad from them in 2019, of course. Dejan Kulusevski moved to Juventus from Atalanta as well. And I think he's been one of the few positives of Tottenham's season. I think he's a quality player. He's been one of the few good signings by Antonio Conte, in fact. So there's certainly, just from looking at it from the outside, there are a lot of boxes ticked with Højlund. I suppose the one reservation would be where United need a truly proven striker next season. Should it be a 20-year-old who has spent one season in Italy and has scored a relatively modest amount? I think that's the con. But United are also looking at Moani at Eintracht Frankfurt, who, I mean, he's scored more goals this season, France international.
He just feels inevitable. Bayern Munich will win the race for him, doesn't it? They've got a kind of monopoly.
Yeah, I mean, Bayern Munich need a striker. Yeah. Bayern Munich sign the best players from the other German clubs more often than not. So sometimes it depends on the player. I always thought with Robert Lewandowski, it was almost, you felt disappointed in him that, having done so well at Dortmund and won the title at Dortmund and got to Champions League final, won the German Cup with Dortmund, that he wanted to stay in Germany. I mean, he really should have played in the Premier League. And Bayern Munich's a big move, but he eventually did move to a big club outside Germany and in Barcelona last year. But he was absolutely tailor-made for the Premier League, and he should have moved to the Premier League. And sometimes, well, not sometimes, but you look at Moani, and if you're his advisor, if there's ample Premier League interest, you'd think, well, go to the Premier League. That's where where to make your name. Anyone can go to Bayern Munich and win the Bundesliga there. It's as great a club as they are, and they clearly have a pull still, because they still sign exceptional players, and they're trying to get Declan Rice now as well, by the looks of things. But it's logical for United to be looking at Moani as well.
An interesting summer ahead then. We'll leave it there, and Samuel, we'll wrap up. But before we go, have you got your sun cream prepared for your trip down to the capital tomorrow? Because I bet it's going to be quite hot. It's June. It's just turned June. Unusual, isn't it, to have an FA Cup final in June?
Very, Very
unusual. I wonder if they'll put bucket hats in the press box. So the club have, I don't know if you saw today, but the club are giving bucket hats to all supporters under their seats in the United.
Oh, have
end.
They?
So
that's,
I wonder
that's,
if that applies
not...
to the press box.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine so. I have been in the Wembley press box where the sun has been shining right on you, but it couldn't have been as bad as at Brentford in August, which was the day that it was like 35 degrees in London, and just as kickoff was looming, we discovered that the sun was absolutely going to be beating on us the whole game.
I have a feeling I was at the 21s the day before that, because Leigh Sports Village was like 30 degrees or something, absolutely unheard of, absolutely crazy for Leigh Sports Village to be that hot, and I was sweating. It's not nice when you get caught on the hop like that and you're trying to work and you're in the blaring sun on your laptop anyways. Safe travels, Samuel, safe travels down to London, and thanks for your time.
No problem, thank you. And I'll be off for a couple of weeks, so I won't be able to have
I forgot about that, yeah.
I won't be able to offer my assistance to United on Saturday either, despite my having my goal scoring boots on earlier in the week. You know, I can now say I've scored this is my sign off, but I have scored more Old Trafford goals than Ronaldo and Weghorst this season.
So on my screen, it says this podcast has went on for 51 minutes. I'm just absolutely shocked it took you that long to mention it, because we did open up with the football chat and you didn't mention it.
I went with modesty, maybe false modesty at the start, but if that might have to be it for as insufferable as I can be.
I think you were hoping for me to bring it up. You were hoping for me to bring it up. That was your tactic, and then I didn't bring it up. You thought, right, I'll have to get it at the end. Fair play,
I had to, yeah.
No one can take that away from you, anyways. Thanks to listeners as usual. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the FA Cup final. Take care. We'll be back on Monday. Bye now.